back with more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Many cookbooks claim to speak to our busy lives and the need to simplify cooking without compromising quality and flavor. But all too often, they come up short. Either they're not that simple, or the finished creation doesn't live up to expectations. Curtis Stone has tried to break that mold for some time. Stone has hosted a plethora of cooking-related TV shows, including Take Home Chef and Top Chef Masters. But Stone says his latest role, that of dad, has really brought home the lesson that everyone is busy, but the importance of a home-cooked meal is worth the effort. The Australian native recently authored the cookbook What's for Dinner? Delicious Recipes for a Busy Life. It just came out in April, and he came to Milwaukee then to chat with us about it, and he began by explaining his approach to simplicity.
You know, when I first did Take Home Chef, which was the TV show that I first did when I came to the States, I had this total revelation as to, you know, what home cooks are actually faced with. Because as a chef, you write recipes and you sit with publishers and they all say, well, it has to be simple and it has to be this and it has to be that. And you take that on board, and that's why you see it so often. It gets marketed that way. But the truth is, as a chef, you still want to show off the fact that you're a great cook and you have all these tricks up your sleeve, you know. But when I did Take Home Chef, I really realized the challenges that people were faced with, and thought to myself, what's more important than showing my skills as a chef is supplying incredible recipes that are actually achievable for people. So I started to sort of think more about how you categorize the challenges that you're faced with when you cook. And some relate to time, some relate to budget, some relate to health, some relate to convenience or, you know, lack of cleaning up. So I started thinking more about that. And then as I started to categorize the challenges, I thought they actually suit different days of the week better, because sometimes you do have more time, like on the weekend, or sometimes you want to be super healthy, like on a Monday. So what I did was I decided to dedicate one challenge to each day of the week. So each day of the week is a chapter within this book. So Motivating Monday is all about healthy eating, because that's when it's the most important that you eat healthy, is at the start of the week. So then you start off on the right foot and you keep going with it. Tuesday is the busiest day in the office for most people. So to me, that's the time crunch. You know, so time-saving Tuesday is appropriate. So all of those recipes are 10 to 30 minutes. Wednesday is one-pot Wednesday. And I think we all get our kitchen back in order at one point through the week. And for me, it's a Wednesday. I have a bit of help. My housekeeper comes on Wednesday and helps me with it. And the last thing I want to do is mess up that clean kitchen. So I've categorized all of those recipes that you can only use one pot, you know, so there's only one thing to clean up at the end of it all. Thursday is when we're saving for the weekend again. So that's Thrifty Thursday. You know, budget-conscious cooking that just, you know, is $10 or thereabouts for a family of four. Friday is when the weekend starts again, so that's five-ingredient Friday. So really uncomplicated cooking. Saturday is when we entertain. So, you know, dinner party Saturday is what I've called that chapter. And that's a little bit more aspirational, where you've got a bit more time to spend on it. And then, of course, Sunday is family day. So that's all that comfort, nostalgic kind of beautiful dishes like the meatloafs and the pot pies and the pot roast and the roast chicken. So for me, that's a really special day where you do spend a little bit more time cooking or baking. But, you know, they're those sort of recipes that fill the house full of different beautiful smells. So I guess the reason for writing this book is I have a really busy life, and I know everybody else does as well. And I thought to myself, if you can figure out what your challenge is and then, you know, put some parameters around the recipe, like it can only take between 10 and 30 minutes, or you can only use one pot, or, you know, so you really do solve those challenges, then you've achieved something. So that's why I've written it the way I've written it.
At some point, as you say, you know, there are concessions that people have to make. Either they don't have the time, they don't have the ingredients, they may not have a particular piece of equipment in a home kitchen that you might have in a restaurant. Where do you think people need to make concessions, and where shouldn't they cut corners?
Look, I think the most important thing about food is there's so many beautiful things that come from a home-cooked meal. You know, when you walk in and you smell that someone's been cooking and you think to yourself, oh, great, what's for dinner? You know, you ask yourself that question. You have instant appreciation for the person that cooked. You also show some cooperation by helping set the table. There's communication around that dinner table. So there's amazing things that happen around the dinner table or around a home-cooked meal. Now, when you eat dinner in front of the television out of a box, all that stuff disappears, unfortunately. So I think what concessions should you make when getting dinner on the table? Whatever you need to, because the home-cooked meal is the most important thing. And if that means cheating a little bit and using some prepared vegetables or buying a sauce that you're going to serve with the chicken that you cook, and that's once or twice during the week, then that's absolutely fine, because you want to keep up that routine. Because as soon as you drop out of it and you fall into the routine of heating something up in a microwave or getting a frozen dinner out from here, or ringing the Thai restaurant down the road and having something delivered, then you start to create a trend that isn't as healthy for your family, in my humble opinion.
And as you say, it sounds like it's the community of food that's the most important thing for you.
You know, it's interesting, because you'd think as a chef, I would say, well, no, the food's the most important thing. And for many years of my life, it was. You know, I worked in great restaurants in Europe, and, you know, it was all about Michelin stars and winning awards. But truthfully, even when I look back to those days, the food was only the conduit to the good time. You know, it was the reason for the food was so you could have the conversation. It wasn't to keep us alive, because if it was just fuel for our bodies, then we'd do it in a different way. But, you know, the food, the home-cooked meal can create so much great stuff. So I think that that's where the importance is.
Do you think we are finding our way back to that more? People keep talking about how our society is speeding up and everything. You know, we're instantly connected and we have all of these prepared, ready-made things we can grab off the shelf and not worry about it. But do you think people are revolting and are saying, no, I really want to get back to what you're talking about, this kind of community through food?
Look, I think there's a small movement that's doing that, but it's very small. You know, essentially, convenience is more important than anything else. We've got more convenience foods than ever before, more fast foods than ever before, which of course is the same reason that we have increased amount of obesity and diabetes and all of this sort of stuff. So I think what's happening is we're getting ourselves to a place that we don't like, you know, and then the revolution comes out of that, where people say, you know what, I'm fed up with it. My family's all overweight and we don't talk to each other anymore, and the television's always on, or everyone's always got their face in an iPod. You know, so at some point you sort of say, okay, on a Saturday, why don't we go to a farmer's market, and why don't we actually cook together as a family? So I do think there is a movement towards that, and people are now just starting to decide whether they join that or not.
Where does failure come in terms of trying new things? Is it important to be willing to fail in the kitchen?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I think what happens a lot of times is people bite off more than they can chew, pardon the pun, because they think, well, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to cook. I'm going to try something. So they go and get their hands on a recipe. A lot of recipes out there are too complicated, and whether they claim to be simple or not, you know, they put too many ingredients in and too many cooking methods, and you still only give yourself the hour to prepare dinner, but then unfortunately this recipe takes way longer than that, and you end up with a failure, whether it doesn't taste the way you wanted it to, or whether you spent 3 hours and your family got so upset that they had to wait for dinner for 2 hours longer than they normally do, or whatever it is. So unfortunately, you know, we do take on, you know, this huge responsibility. But I think the way to solve that is just start really basically. You know, if you just start in your adventures in the kitchen, then just start with recipes that are so easy to achieve.
What would you suggest people look for? What do you think makes a recipe easy to achieve for somebody who is beginning or might be really reluctant to step in the kitchen to do other than heating something up in the microwave?
Truthfully, I think it's different for everybody. You know, some people I speak to, they are reluctant to try an ingredient that they've never seen before, and other people are open to it, you know, so that's a personal thing. Some people get flustered when there's 10 ingredients in a recipe because they're like, oh, there's so much stuff going on, I can't follow it. And other people don't mind that as long as there's nothing new. You know, as long as they've seen the technique that's going to be used before, then they're okay with it. So I sort of think it is individual for every single person. But, you know, the sun's coming out slowly. And, you know, as summer sort of does roll around, we'll be outside a lot more. Grilling's a really easy way to eat and an easy way to cook. And so is making salads, you know. So that's a great place to start if people are just beginning.
When you're putting recipes together for a book like this, what makes you keep one and what makes you toss one away? I mean, are you vetting this with other people who are not chefs? Are you saying, here, try this and see how this works for you?
We sit around a table with a few of my culinary team, and we talk about, you know, what's achievable and what's not. And we'll throw an idea out there, and someone will say, well, what about making some little wontons with like a little shrimp sort of mixture? And we're like, who is going to make wontons? No way, you know. And I've got those wontons in a previous book, by the way, and they're delicious, but they do take some time. So with this book, we really just drilled down and tried to get as honest as we possibly could. And the truth is, I have a busy life. I'm a new dad, and I get home and I put dinner on the table with three or four ingredients in 10 minutes. You know, I don't overthink it. It's not going to win me any awards if I was serving it in a restaurant, but it's not trying to. It's just trying to get something delicious and healthy on the table for your family.
When did you first get interested in food? When did you know this is what you wanted to do?
Look, my mum was a really good baker, but I joke about it and say she wasn't the best cook in the world. And, you know, but she taught me a lot about food because I used to watch her in the kitchen, and I've always had a love for eating, and I still do. You know, I mean, look at me. Here I am on Top Chef Masters and eating some of the best food in the world, and I'm the luckiest guy going around, I tell you. And, you know, I get to cook and do what I love. So I started off with this passion for food, and I've still got it.
Do you feel that a good cook needs to love to eat as well?
I always think that you cook much better what you like to eat. You know, so if you love to eat seafood, you'll be a good cook, you know, when it comes to cooking seafood. And if you don't like eating meat, then you won't cook it very well, because instinctively you know that, you know, when you put that beautiful caramelization on the outside of that steak, that's going to give you a beautiful sweet crust, and that's exactly what you're looking for, you know. So I think that the more you understand about food, and that comes from eating it, the better you'll be at it.
What about making the transition for you between Australia and the United States? I'm thinking of food cultures. How different are they?
They're really different, actually. I mean, I moved from Australia to the UK, and I lived in Europe for 7 or 8 years, and then I actually came from there over to the States. So when I first moved to the UK, I thought, gee, this is going to be so different to Australia. But it wasn't. It was relatively similar. And then when I came to America, I felt like America would be quite close to Australia, but it wasn't. It was a million miles away and very different in the way that America sort of – their attitude to food and also the type of dishes they like. There's some things I love about the cuisine here in America, and there's some other things that I think, oh, that could be done better, you know.
So like what?
I think – because of the sheer scale of America, there's so many different levels of everything. And I think that there's incredible food at the top end and there's hideous food at the bottom end. And that's a shame, you know. And I think that, unfortunately, you know, we do have this huge reliance on processed food here in America. And those companies target the lower socio demographics. And I think that that's a bummer. You know, food should be for everybody, and good food should be for everyone, and healthy food should be for everyone. And the way it's sort of worked its way out, the way the food industry's moved, is it's not necessarily. And I think that that's a shame.
And that's not true in Australia?
It's probably less true, and only because of the fact that there's a lot less people. We have 20 million, you have 280 or something. And, you know, the distribution of income and wealth is much more even. I think Australia's minimum wage is something like $15 or $16 per hour. And in the States, in different states, it changes, it fluctuates. But, you know, there is a smaller distribution of income and wealth over there than there is here. Bigger gap here. And look, in some ways, that means that you have the best organic food in the world in many respects. You know, I live in Los Angeles and, you know, we have access to the most unbelievable food and markets and whatnot. But, you know, there's also amazing things about the American food culture that I absolutely love. You know, you have this real love of comfort food and that sort of nostalgic style eating, whether it's you know, meatloafs and pot roasts, and there's still a lot of tradition around food that I think is really important and is alive and well here in the States.
I would think one of the similarities might be to the immigrant populations that have come both to Australia and to the United States, bringing their food traditions with them, and we somehow incorporate them.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. And, you know, the ethnic mix is different, of course. You know, Australia is very close to Southeast Asia and geographically, as well as having a lot of people that have migrated to live there now. So you see a lot more Asian-style cooking in Australia and ingredients. We're here, of course, you're a lot closer to South America and Central America, and that's alive and well here as well. So the thing about America that I love so much is it really is the United States of America. And we're on a book tour right now. So you go from state to state. You know, 2 days ago, we're in Louisiana having a crawfish boil with a guy that caught an alligator in his pond, and he had it in the back of his pickup truck, you know. And here we are up in Wisconsin. We just had a bratwurst at the Brat House on our little break. And, you know, there's cheese everywhere. everywhere you go in America has a different custom and a different culture and a different cuisine, a different set of rules and a different climate. And it's beautiful. It really is. It's a very special place.
We never run out of things to try and eat. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
So for you, a guilty pleasure, a guilty food pleasure?
Well, I live in LA and we're very close to East LA, which is where, you know, the huge Hispanic population, and they've got the best taco trucks. So I quite often make late night runs down to East LA to get some greasy tacos. So that's my guilty pleasure.
Do you have a favorite recipe in here or one that you would suggest? Now, I know you've only been in Milwaukee for about 6 hours, but now that you've had the brat, is there a recipe in this book that you would recommend for us to try?
Ooh, you know what? There's a fail-safe in there, which I developed for my fiancée, Lindsay, and it's a vegetable lasagna, which you wouldn't think would go over well in Milwaukee. But I tell you what, it's got the most beautiful layers of veggies and pasta and cheese, and it's creamy and just delicious. And
you
I know
cheese.
Everyone will like that. Right. So that's one thing that you guys would absolutely love. But there's so many different recipes in there. There's a beautiful meatball in the first chapter. A turkey meatball, which has all these incredible flavors that I'm sure you'd be familiar with, but in a really healthy way. So there's all sorts of stuff.
Curtis Stone, it has been such a pleasure having you in the studio. I can't thank you enough for stopping by.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so nice to be here.
Curtis Stone is the author of What's for Dinner? Delicious Recipes for a Busy Life, published by Ballantine. He's also the host of two current TV shows, Top Chef Masters and Around the World in 80 Plates. You can learn about all things Curtis Stone and see a picture of him in the somewhat underappointed WUWM kitchen at wuwm.com/legeffect. And that is all the time we have today. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, your NPR station in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next.